Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by The Isley Brothers, The Carpenters, The Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
This is Dmitry Samarov from Chicago, Illinois. And I love listening to Vish Khanna's Creative Control because whether he's talking to a favorite musician or actor of mine or someone I've never heard of, it's as if he's introducing me to a new friend. And the way things are going, couldn't you use a new friend? Listen now.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Ed Jerkin is a musician, songwriter, and singer from Milwaukee, Wisconsin originally, who is currently based in Chicago, Illinois. Professionally known as E.R. Jerkin, he has lived in a few different parts of the United States, making music in bands and on his own along the way. But on April 23rd, 2021, Drag City Records' new imprint, Country Time, released Jerkin's most fully realized and personal solo expression yet, a beautifully orchestrated folk pop album called I Stand Corrected. A few weeks after its release, Ed and I connected for a conversation about his life and times in America, his earliest musical and comedic influences, and the fact that he has kind of come to his own musical expression rather late in life, how he's used his voice to create a band, exercising trauma and pain via music and this album, I Stand Corrected, David Berman, Drag City, and Country Time, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is the 629th episode of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented E.R. Jerkin, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Ed. How's it going?
Vish, hey. How are you doing, man?
I'm well. First of all, where in the world are you?
I am in Chicago, Illinois, and I'm at my home.
Oh, very nice. So how long have you been in Chicago?
So I've been here 5 years and maybe 3 months, since 2016.
Oh, and what prompted... first of all, I guess I should say, where did you move from?
Sure. I moved from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and the move was prompted by looking to get into a little bit bigger city. I had actually lived in Chicago throughout my 20s, so I was familiar with it, and it's only about an hour and a half south of Milwaukee anyways. Mm-hmm. So I figured, this would be a good time to move, and I already know the lay of the land, so I might as well just do it. And that I did.
Now, I know you mostly from the biographical information about you that has been supplied to me. So mm-hmm. I hope I've got this accurate. I mean, you've lived in other parts of the country as well, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I've lived in California, a few different cities on the northern part of the state. New Orleans, Louisiana. I lived there. And then two stints in Chicago. And I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So I've lived there off and on too throughout my years.
Oh, okay. So you lived, that's quite a flavor for the country.
It is. Yeah, exactly. Now I just need to do like Boston or something to get the East Coast some representation.
Have you traveled throughout the country as well? Have you been to Boston? Have you been to New York? These kinds of places?
I have actually. Yeah, I've actually been to almost all the states in the United States. And definitely have been to Boston and New York somewhat recently. And there's just a few left to go to knock off all 50. Alaska and Hawaii, and then the Carolinas are really all that remain.
You avoided the Carolinas somehow.
Wasn't intentional. It's just, somebody's got to be last. And they wound up fitting the bill.
I've been to the Carolinas, and I'm
really
I'm Canadian. It becomes a weird thing. Like the only places in Canada that I haven't been are mm-hmm. Nunavut. Wait, no, mm-hmm. The only place in Canada I haven't been is Nunavut. So if there's one I need to get to, and then I'm done. It becomes mm-hmm. like card collecting, doesn't it?
It really does.
You really want to get to all of them somehow.
You have to. Yeah. And so now you've been then to Yellowknife?
Yeah. My cousin, I went there in 2000 for my cousin's wedding.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Was that great?
Yeah, it was fun. It was memorable. It was weird. We flew from Ontario to Edmonton for, mm-hmm. whatever that is, 4 hours. Then we drove for 15. So that was weird.
My.
I've never gotten off a plane, and then the journey wasn't even half done.
Right. Well, and a 15-hour drive in general is unusual.
Yes. Yeah, it was it was definitely unusual, and they're bison. Everyone was going, super fast. Like, in our parlance, 120, 140 kilometers an hour, way over the speed limit.
That's moving.
And then there'd be bison off in the distance, and as you get closer, you'd have to slow down. There's just herds of bison, wild bison, and mosquitoes the size of... hard balls, basketball,
oh my
baseballs.
Gosh.
Yeah. Huge mosquitoes and all night sunlight, I would think you could have the best basketball players in the world if you lived in, if they cultivated that, because you get to play all night. You don't have
right.
to come inside,
Absolutely.
So I enjoyed it. Have you ever been up north? You need to get to Alaska, it sounds like, but have you ever been further north?
I have been to Montreal and I've been to Niagara Falls, north of the border. So
that's the most, that's the northernmost you've gotten at this point.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I'd love to, you know, I think about, going up to, driving up to Alaska, you know, through Saskatchewan and, now Saskatchewan is east of, Alberta.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, then Saskatchewan, all the way to Dawson Creek and then, up through the Yukon there. Yeah. But, you know, I'm not an everyday driver. I drive maybe four times a year.
Oh.
And so it would be an undertaking. So.
I'm surprised to hear of your limited, you know, driving, just given the,
right.
the mobility we've already described. I guess in a general sense, if you can you mm-hmm. explain what has prompted you to do so much traveling throughout at least your own country by the sounds of it? We haven't even gotten to the rest of the world. We're just in America
right.
and Canada so far. But yeah, what is prompt? Is it your work? What has prompted so much movement, per se?
So a lot of it was growing up. You know, I grew up with three siblings, and my parents had, you know, a van that we went on trips with most summers. And a lot of them were pretty far out. Like we did one to Wyoming from Milwaukee, which is going to knock off a lot of states right there. And I, you know, had a decent amount of free time. I had the time to just do some traveling even as an adult. I would, you know, go up to Portland or Washington when I was living in California, or when I was here in the Midwest. You know, the East Coast is not too far off. It's maybe an hour and 15-minute flight to New York City from here.
Yeah.
And so I definitely took advantage of that and got around as much as I could.
I see. Okay. So so is there any kind of educational or vocational bent to your life at this moment? I mean, for someone who's moved around so long, I don't know your background beyond.
Sure.
I will say to you, and I'll be frank with you, I'll be blunt with you, candid even.
Please.
I am
forthcoming.
I know you best from your beautiful new record, I Stand Corrected.
Thank you.
And as I say, I've been supplied some information about you, but otherwise don't know much about you. So I hope you don't mind a little interrogation here. I don't know what else you do, where you come from, what you're all about. Did you go to school? Did you have a job of some kind? What beyond music is, what's going on with you there?
Sure. So, so currently I work in an office type job, here in Chicago, and we've been working remotely for the last year and a couple of months. But, prior to that, it was, you know, an office job downtown.
Mm-hmm.
I did go to, got an undergraduate degree in Milwaukee many years ago now. You know, I've been getting the reunion emails from my alma mater, and it's sad but good at the same time, I suppose.
If I may, what was your degree in?
Business administration.
Oh, okay.
So,
there you go. Not necessarily an arts and culture person.
No.
Okay.
But I was interested in writing back then. I definitely had an interest in music my whole life. And I played the alto saxophone in my university's concert band and jazz band.
Oh.
So, you know, there was some musical aspects to my life back then.
You'd have to be quite good to be in the university band, I would think.
Well, you know, I got the gig mainly because of my looks. But
I see.
But yeah, no, I was pretty good. Plus, you know, the school that I went to, it's called Marquette University. And the school that I went to, you know, definitely has, you know, a strong academic reputation, but it's not really it's not like North Texas in terms of like drawing people for, you know, a musical pursuit. So pretty level playing field. And I loved playing in the band there, and it was a good experience for sure.
Okay. But did you have music in your youth, like, as well? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I took piano lessons as a child, played the saxophone as well, starting when I was maybe about 10 or 11 years old. And of course, I was fascinated with the popular music at the time. So I'm 41. So, the music.
Happy birthday!
Well, thank you so much, and likewise. and so, you know, I was definitely interested in the popular music at the time, in the top 40 But I wouldn't call my household necessarily musical. Like, for example, I didn't hear the Beatles until I was in college.
Oh.
So there was a lot of stuff that, you know, a lot of people took for granted that I had no knowledge of until very late in life, relatively speaking.
Was music frowned upon in the home you grew up in?
I don't know. I mean, my parents and siblings, you know, they liked music, but maybe, you know, they didn't have the same taste as a lot of people. I remember the one artist that my dad loved when I was growing up was Anita Baker.
Oh, yeah. So, right.
Yep. And so that was big. Billy Joel was another favorite of them. So there was some music around the house, but again, and a lot of smooth jazz, which, you know, I've come to appreciate because it does remind me of my youth. But that genre was big in the Jerkin household, too.
I see. Okay. So so kind of mainstreamy.
Yeah.
Not looking. Yeah. Not a lot of subversive art in your home life.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't like they were listening to Fear or something.
No, quite the opposite, I would say.
Right.
Anita Baker on one side, Fear on the other, I'd
maybe
say.
A little Fear.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Fear.
So, what about comedy? I hear a lot of wit and humor in your work on this record. Almost borderline satire, I think, on some, and I'm not trying to suggest it's not sincere music.
Sure.
Beautiful music, but I hear that, you know, when your ear perks up a little bit where you think, oh, this sincere thing might be, there's some sort of scheme going on here. This person might be up to something, I think, might be making a comment on culture. Was comedy big for you as a child or as a young adult?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And I feel like it almost pervades my sensibilities and psyche so much that it, you know, unintentionally, it comes through into the music that I make. Like I, you know, I didn't have like a comedic agenda of sorts making it. But, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with Bill Hicks.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Andy Kaufman. Those are people that are just as much idols to me as the musicians that I love.
Yeah, there's a theatricality to your work that I find is steeped more in comedy than Broadway, per se. Does that make sense?
Sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think some of that, too, might come from Ryan's influence. Ryan Murphy, the gentleman that produced the album and a friend of mine, he's deeply funny, too. And the two of us, we worked really closely on this project and, you know, I'm sure. And now I'm thinking back to some of the antics that we had engaged in while making the album. And I'm sure some of that kind of snuck into the music in some way.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So in terms of, you mentioned Ryan there, in terms of the instrumentation on this record and in terms of the vocalization, I mean, I think those are pretty unique and distinct aspects to this record. Can you talk about the sort of, I guess, it's a kind of orchestration, even if it's, you know, vocal orchestration, if you will.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that? Like, what was your, for those who haven't heard it yet, can you kind of elaborate upon where I'm coming from with this? What's going on this record?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you listen to it, you're going to hear a lot of overdubbed and layered vocals, not just in terms of harmony, but, you know, within the harmonic structure, there's, you know, in some cases, you know, maybe eight instances of the same vocal part being sung. And it does lend a unique sound to it because it's kind of like there's an orchestra of just my voice. And it sounds better than that description. If you're listening to me talk and you say, I don't want to hear this guy 42 times overdubbed on an album, it does sound better.
Is there anything about that approach that is in itself a bit of a wink? You know, like it doesn't come across as overwrought, but some people tend to, you know, they tend to put too much stuff into stuff. And I can't tell if you're kind of commenting on that just a little bit.
Not really. You know, the whole thing started because, you know, I'm not a great instrumentalist, but I'm a fairly good singer.
Yeah,
and
beautiful singer.
Yeah, and I don't have many friends that are actively playing music, like playing instruments. And so if I wanted to, you know, make recordings with myself, really the only angle I could come up with to have it be not just a guy singing along with acoustic guitar would be to kind of make my vocals or my background vocals the background parts. So kind of as a substitute for the instrumentation.
Yeah.
And I started doing that, gosh, maybe let's call it 10 years ago. And it kind of grew from there. And I knew I had kind of stumbled across something that was going to work for me to get a good sound for these home recordings.
Yeah.
And I just kind of kept growing it from there. And I would say the songs on I Stand Corrected, the vocal arrangements there are going to be the most advanced that I had done compared to maybe 10 years ago. Hmm. But yeah, it's really just because I can't bring an orchestra into my bedroom to, you know, play these parts. So I kind of sang them myself.
Well, it's very imaginative, and it does, I think, harken back to some sort of traditional framework. Like I think of AM radio, for example, mm-hmm. which has a sound to it, a classic sound to it. And again, going back to what you were saying about how music entered your life or didn't enter your life as a mm-hmm. as a kid. I mean, can you? I know this can be reductive, but I wonder if you can cite some influences, because I don't want to just... There are things that people will hear, like the Beach Boys, maybe. Mm-hmm. I hear a lot of Jeff Lynne, like Electric mm-hmm. Light Orchestra. Does any of that resonate with you?
Yeah, both do. In fact, when I was a kid, I got two cassettes for Easter in, I think, 87 or 88. And one of them was Bon Jovi, Slippery When Wet.
Of course.
Which didn't, yeah, naturally. and then I got the Beach Boys. They had a compilation, I think, in the mid-80s. Actually, I know it was the mid-80s, called Made in the USA.
Oh, yeah.
And so I got that. And that was huge for me, that Beach Boys compilation, especially, too, because it goes through the early stuff, but then it also... has some of the material from Pet Sounds and Good Vibrations is on there. And so from a young age, that was some of my favorite music. And ELO is another favorite of mine, too. I think they're really underrated. And even the newer stuff that Jeff Lynne has done, I think is really fantastic as well. I mean, not to mention the Wilbury stuff and there's production work with
George Harrison and people like that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So yeah, you hit the nail on the head there.
Okay. I got it. I thought that was there, but I also hear like earlier I was talking about satire, but maybe I don't know if that's the right term, because you tend to quote lyrics or song mm-hmm. titles even. And yeah. I can't, like, I hear there's a Steely Dan reference. I was listening on, I believe it's on, Colonels of the Morning. Is that the one that mm-hmm. has the Reelin' in the Years?
Reelin' the Years, yeah.
Yeah, and then on Main Man, I feel like you're basically, I think you're quoting a Roy Orbison song. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's true as well. Or what's interpolating? Is that a word?
I guess interpolating could be the word, but when I listen to it, I'm like, wait, that's the chorus of that Roy Orbison song, ostensibly. So I guess when I hear that, my ears perk up to stuff like that. I'm like, oh, what's happening? What's going on? What is this saying about this person's perspective on those songs and where they sit in culture? I'm a journalist, which means I'm kind of annoying. I can't just listen to something and enjoy it. I have to be like, what is the meaning behind this? So am I overthinking this? Like, I don't think they're scrutinizing these words and these things, but maybe they are. What's your take on that? Why do you quote such things?
Well, I think the angle I think where I was coming from was that it's kind of a love letter to the music that I like.
Hmm.
And so that element of it, you know, where it may be quoting a particular phrase or referencing a specific musician, it's because like those things are important to me. And so they're important to the record too.
Yeah. Okay, so this is a reflective record on some level, for sure.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Is this, in terms of your discography, explain that for people who don't know. How many records have you, I believe this is your first full-length record, right?
It is, yeah. And I had done like an EP of sorts several years ago as well. That was just kind of self-released. I dubbed it onto cassette tapes to sell at shows. Back then, but this is the first full length. So
you've come to this, is it fair to say, do you think you've come to this expression late in life, or is that just Is that ageism? Am I being an ageist?
No.
You and I are about the same age, so I feel comfortable saying you've come to this.
Yeah.
You have. I mean, is it fair to say you've come to this a little late in life, right?
Yeah, generally speaking, yeah. I mean, you know, Robert Pollard, I think he kind of broke out when he was 38. So I'm 3 years behind Robert Pollard, for anyone that's keeping track.
Oh, it's quite common these days. Joe Casey from Protomartyr, for example, started this really late as well. It seems to be happening more and more.
And I think it's all the better. You know, it's not just a young man's game.
No.
Especially,
no, you've accrued all this wisdom. Like, you could have been making mistakes in public since you were 18, like a lot of us have, and instead you waited it out. Now, I guess it begs the question, and I don't want to pry too much, but what spurred this on? I mean, something has to click in someone's mind to say, you know what? I've talked about writing a book for my whole life. I'm finally going to do it. I've talked about making a record. I'm finally going to do it. Do you know what maybe clicked the switch for you?
Yeah, I do. So I had kind of gotten rid of all of my instruments maybe back in early 2010s. So I wasn't necessarily actively thinking about ever, you know, writing songs or making music ever again. And about 4 years ago, right around this time, I just got the idea, well, maybe it would be nice to have a guitar around the apartment. You know, it could play, you know, write some songs or something just to occupy myself. And so I did. I got one, and the songs kind of started to come. In fact, one of the songs on I Stand Corrected actually was one of the first songs that I had written since acquiring the guitar, and it was Let Go the Coat.
Hmm.
So I started coming up with a few tunes, and it... I thought they were pretty decent, and I had spoken with a friend of mine, Gene, who lives here in Chicago, and we had talked about maybe just getting a few songs together and then meeting with Ryan Murphy, who I mentioned earlier, to see if he would be interested in arranging or producing some of the material. So it was basically I got the guitar, the songs that I was writing I thought were pretty good, and then it kind of sprang from there.
Okay. Now, you said something near the top there that intrigued me. What prompted you to, in the early 2010s, I guess is what you said, what prompted you to rid yourself of all instruments? That sounds like a cleansing was going on.
It's true. Yeah. And that's a big part of it. Some of it was practical. I was going to be moving from the Bay Area to New Orleans, and I had to kind of get rid of anything that wouldn't fit in an SUV. But it was also, too, like out of frustration. I was definitely pursuing doing something like I wanted to do, which is, you know, to write songs, record them, perform them, and just things weren't really sticking. And so kind of in a blast of immaturity and frustration, I said, to hell with it, you know, I'm going to get rid of these instruments and do something else with my life.
When you say things weren't really sticking, does that mean for you creatively you were frustrated with yourself, or do you mean sticking that what you were doing wasn't resonating with those around you or externally?
The latter, yeah. Just, you know, things, I just wasn't getting much momentum. So my son, like, I felt like I was doing good work, but it just wasn't connecting with people.
So did you make records back then?
Well, no. You know, it was not like this. You know, I did some home recording.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would send those to friends or, you know, put them on some kind of physical media to give to folks or sell them at shows. But it definitely wasn't a full length.
Hmm.
It would be just more like maybe three songs or something.
And this was in California?
It was, yeah.
Okay. So does that speak to the community there or the lack of community for you personally at that time? Like, did you just, like, could you play shows and stuff? Were people coming out?
Yeah, I did a few shows and, you know, I felt like they got a warm reception, but, you know, not enough to really cultivate a fan base or enough interest to, you know, build upon. Yeah, I also think too, like looking back on some of the music that I had made back then too, it wasn't as focused as what I was doing with I Stand Corrected and since then. So
none of the songs we're hearing emanate from that period. These are all more recent.
Right. Yeah, they're all more recent. Just about everything on the new record is from 2018 or 2017 onward.
Okay. So did you ever, you know, 10 years ago, or roughly 11 years ago, you're in your early 30s, I guess.
Correct.
I just did some math. I don't know if you saw that. You could hear what I just did. I did a little bit of math. So that's,
I heard the TI-85 clicking in the background.
Exactly. Yeah. I had some computational stuff going on back here. No, my point is that even in your, you know, early 30s, that's still, I would consider that still a little late to be going out and playing. Did you ever play in bands in high school, in your 20s, anything like that?
I did. I had two bands that I was in my very early 20s. So maybe when I was 21 or so, I was in a duo with a lady from my hometown. We were called the Bobcats. And it was good. You know, I thought the material, it was, again, very poppy stuff. And she played the keyboards, I played guitar, and we both sang. And then I was in a group shortly after that, a five-piece group called the Candyland Riots that was based in Chicago here. I played guitar and sang. And so we had two guitars, a keyboardist, a bassist, and a drummer.
Okay. So you had the experience. I was just trying to figure out if you started in your 30s.
Oh,
It didn't take off. So you're like, screw this. I'm not doing this. But you had the experience of being in bands. Did those bands resonate?
I think so. Yeah, the Bobcats, the duo, definitely connected with some folks in Milwaukee. Didn't last too long for us to, really see where it would have taken us. It was maybe, let's see, so like summer of 2001. Yeah, it was less than a year, but maybe about 9 or 10 months. And then the group I was in here in Chicago, that was about 2 years, and I felt like things, you know, we were getting some steam going, but, you know, we had split up and probably before, you know, we were able to really accomplish too much. But we got a lot of really good bookings here in town. Do you remember the group, the Unicorns?
Yes. I'm actually, as you and I are speaking, I'll be talking to Nick Thorburn or Nick Diamonds like tomorrow.
I loved them. I think Islands is great too. And
that's what we'll be. So Nick and I have known each other a while. I actually did a tour with Nick's band Human Highway, where some of the states that I've been to are because of that. Mississippi, Texas, you know, these kinds of like places I'd never been before.
Right.
So that was in 2009, I think, actually. So yeah. The context of the Nick conversation will be about the new Islands record. So anyway, sorry. What about the Unicorns?
Oh, we opened for them, and it was great. Yeah. I was a huge fan of theirs, that was awesome. And I felt like, you know, things were going to kind of only go up from there. And then we fizzled apart maybe 4 months after that. So
breaking up, relationships ending is always difficult, and it can be the gateway to something else. And is that the case for you on some level?
Kind of, you know, as musically speaking, I kind of wasn't doing all that much after the band split up. And it wasn't really actually. Well, I worked at a venue here in town. Do you know the Empty Bottle?
Yeah, on that same tour, we played. Yeah. We played the Empty Bottle, that Human Highway, and the band. The other band was the Magic, who I was primarily sort of road managing, I guess. And I've been to the Empty Bottle. Yep.
I don't think I was working there at the time, but that's kind of what I did. So the band had split up, and I started working at the Empty Bottle, and. You know, I worked there maybe 3 years and didn't really give any thought to performing, writing, or anything like that. And then it wasn't until I was out in California that I got the interest again. I started writing material, recording some stuff, trying to get some shows. Nothing was really sticking. I said, you know, F this, and got rid of my instruments, moved to New Orleans, and didn't really think that, you know, me and writing music again would ever intersect. So.
That's fascinating. New Orleans, music city, known for its music.
I know.
And you got rid of all your instruments. I was wondering if you got rid of all your instruments thinking you could replace them when you got to New Orleans.
No.
But it sounds like you took a musical hiatus.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, you know, I went there and drinking became my job.
Oh, really? Okay.
Not necessarily, but I was working. That was a misguided idea to live there just for a bunch of reasons, mainly financially. Like, it takes a decent amount of dough to live down there.
Well,
I did not have that.
I have heard from friends who've lived there or been there that it is a bit of it's a rough city too, right?
Little bit, yeah. You know, that I didn't really encounter any issues like that. Even though there's a street, St. Claude, that's kind of like a dividing line between where things are rough and where they're not. And we were on the not so rough side of it, but pretty proximate.
Yeah.
But I didn't encounter too much roughness.
Right. So is New Orleans before California? I'm trying to.
It is after.
After California.
And then I went from New Orleans to Milwaukee.
Okay.
And so that was where
I was just going to say, you're a Midwest guy by the sounds of it. Head down to the South. But the trip west intrigues me. Was that for music reasons, or why did you end up in California?
Sure. Well, as I'm sure you can understand, there's, you know, a romance to being out there. And so, you know, that was part of it. A friend of mine from Chicago had moved out there as well. And so I went to visit him in December of 2007. And I was kind of like, well, it's 60 degrees outside and snowing back in Chicago, and I've got no kids and, you know, no debt. Like, I might as well just do this.
Yeah.
And so I moved out there a couple months later without really much thought other than, I'll just go to this place where I know one person and try to make a life for myself here. So, that was really it. It was a real spur of the moment decision.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So do you have kids now?
I do not. Okay. No kids.
You're not you're not moored to anywhere. You could leave again. You could move somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I'm moving in the process of this interview.
Are you?
Are you? I don't know.
Like, I can't see what you're doing. You might be packing boxes while you're talking to me. I have no idea.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I could be in Pittsburgh by the time this is all over, baby.
So the recording and the writing and the recording of this record, I assume, does most of it predate our pandemic time?
Yeah, it does. So it was the writing was 2018 and the recording was 19.
Okay, so do you find any kind of eeriness to the record given what we are all going through now? There's a song, and I apologize. The title escapes me at the moment. You can maybe fill me in. There's a song where the chorus urges one to take the medication.
Yeah, that's Let Go the Coat.
That's the one. That's the first one you wrote for the.
Yeah,
for
that is exactly.
Yeah,
that's what kicked it all off.
Right.
And yeah, you know, I feel like that was prescient. I think that's how you say the word. Prescient.
Prescient. Yeah. Prescient.
Yeah, depressive.
Yeah, that's right. Something like that.
It was valid even, you know, back then. There's definitely an eeriness to the album and an isolation, or, you know, a quality of isolation to it that I think speaks to what we've gone through this last year.
Do you know where this, like, if you can sort of be objective about recurring themes or maybe potentially an underlying theme, what's your take? These are your songs. You made them. Now you've got them all together on this record. It's about to be released into the world and all those sorts of things. And people are starting to find out about it. But, what is your take on where you were coming from? Maybe overall?
Really it was, exorcism, you know, just like, saying just saying a lot of stuff like about my own, existence that, you know, maybe I didn't feel comfortable sharing and, you know, listening to it, that may not be obvious. But of course, from my perspective, you know, knowing, you know, what a lot, you know, knowing what I'm saying, you know, there's definitely like a sense of release to all of the songs. You know, like I'm saying something that I wouldn't feel comfortable saying in kind of a, you know, either symbolic or coded way. And now it's out of me, so to speak.
Do you know why you were holding on to these things in this way? Have you got, you know, have you made any kind of self-analysis about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I'd had kind of a rough go of things by the time I left California, especially like the last few months. And I think that, you know, a lot of these songs speak to that time. And so because it was, you know, difficult, not just for me, but, you know, the people that were close to me, you know, I felt like I couldn't really talk about it too much. And so to be able to, you know, talk about some, you know, traumatic experiences that I've had in my life in a way that I felt comfortable was therapeutic. So
it's interesting when you convey such things via song or art. There's a little bit of obfuscation, like it's therapeutic for you,
right.
But I mean, do you think that the people around you at that time or now who know of what you're referring to, would they pick up on things by listening to this record?
I think it's pretty obvious. Yeah. You know, just because some of the things are, you know, specific enough. Yeah, I would imagine. My brother-in-law heard it and I think he definitely picked up on it. So.
Well, again, I don't want to pry too much into what you're referring to. It sounds like, I guess the first question I'll ask is, do you feel good now? Do you feel okay now?
Yeah, definitely. Compared to then, for sure. You know, like I have, like everybody, you know, I have struggles and, you know, good days and bad days and stuff. But I think back then I was not rooted in reality, whereas I feel like I'm pretty rooted in reality these days, at least enough to, you know, to live in society.
So does Let Go the Coat, for example, we've really homed in on this particular
song. It's a great song. Yeah.
It's a lovely song. When you sort of get into that chorus, what is the medication that you're referring to, if you will? I don't want to be too specific about it, but it's weird that that song is resonating with me now as we deal with vaccinations and
right.
And hesitancy about medication. Frankly, it's medication, it's medicine,
right?
But it has a different meaning for you, and like you say, you acknowledge there's some eeriness, but is there any correlation between what you're talking about from your own personal perspective in that song to what your country and the world is going through now in terms of, you know, accepting our reality? Because you say you weren't really living in reality.
Right.
That's a really significant part of your population that isn't living in, and ours,
yeah,
in Canada,
yeah.
Around the world. There's a significant part of the population that is not living in reality. And a lot of it has to do right now with health and wellness and what the right thing to do is. Do you see that resonance within from your personal experience to what we're all going through?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if the song were written today, you know, it could like pretty much completely transpose the meaning of it to, you know, a significant portion of our population here.
Yeah.
But in that specific instance, it was, you know, me saying that, you know, the world wasn't making sense to me, and a medical professional saying, well, take this and maybe things will start making some sense to you.
Right.
So
you're getting into more psychotropic kind of stuff, I suppose.
Yeah.
But within it, like I hear, again, and I don't mean to delve too much into your personal struggle, but there's propaganda in that song.
Yeah, well, right. It was from medical professionals that were, you know, like kind of trying to take me by the hand, maybe forcefully, and have me do things and think a certain way. So
do you relate to people who are resisting what's going on right now in terms of the medical advice they're being given?
No, I don't relate to them at all. It's sad.
Yeah.
You know, I just got my first vaccine last week, and I'm going to be very relieved when I get the second. But, you know, I got a flu vaccine a couple years ago, and I still can feel the needle, you know, still feel the wound, so to speak, from that. And I can still feel this one.
Oh,
small price to pay for my health. But, yeah, it's, you know, it's more of a commentary, I think, on just me being older and things, you know, my body not being nearly as resilient as it once was.
Well, I had invoked the phrase propaganda earlier. I'm about to ask you a branding question. And I will ask that first, actually. So which vaccine did you get?
I got the Moderna, as most people pronounce it. Yeah.
Because okay, I have one dose. As we're speaking, I have one dose of the AstraZeneca.
Oh.
A lot of bad press for the AstraZeneca.
Well, is that just up there then?
No, we mostly have that up here, but that now they're. I told my wife I didn't want to take it.
Okay.
If I don't make it, mm-hmm. I just want
you know
this
my baby will.
Oh, sorry. Bob Dylan reference there.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, if I don't, I just feel like I wanted to wait on because AstraZeneca was getting bad press, and I wanted to wait on the other stuff. But then there's so much propaganda and media issues, like just how they're covering stuff up here.
Yeah.
That I can understand why people are confused, and in your personal situation, I'm sure you weren't seeing things from your perspective now. You can sort of acknowledge that you weren't seeing things correctly. Like, did you ultimately take the doctor's advice at that point?
Yeah, I did. And, I didn't really have much of a choice in the matter unless I, found a way to, flush whatever it was that they were giving me down the toilet.
Yeah.
But, I did. And, I kind of went with it. Just to, felt like it would get me out of the situation faster. So
did it help?
Yeah. I mean, I'm here today.
Okay, good. So
yeah.
So there's some. I don't know. I like the scientists and the doctors, but I find like the media muddles all the messages. And like, I don't know if you've ever watched any of your cable news channels in America.
Very little, but
probably should.
Yeah, enough to know. Yeah.
I've been off of it since you guys had your election, pretty much. I don't see
which election, 16 or 20?
No, 20. Sorry. I was really trying to keep track of things for the last one, maybe to my detriment. But the point is, in between all of the news segments, so-called news segments, I don't even know what they are anymore, drug ads, lots of ads for drugs.
And really?
Just a ton of them. Just every kind of drug for every kind of thing. And then they cut back to the news segment and someone trying to scare me and give me anxiety or convince me that there's something wrong with me. And then that segment ends, drug ads. So then I start to get, I'm not a conspiracy person. I mean, that's a really loaded term these days. But I am a critical thinker. So then when I... You know what I'm getting at here? I feel like you probably are too. Like, what is this shit they're trying to serve me here? And how do I navigate that? I feel like some of that, if I may, is permeating your record a little bit. There's a questioning, isn't there?
It could be. I do, at least here in the U.S., they're like, they'll have ads for things like, do you ever itch?
Try
such and such. And then, of course, they'll have the side effects.
Yeah, that's the side effects thing. That's the thing. Right. That's everything's a side effect right now. And that's what we're doing with this vaccine stuff. Like, we were supposed to. Yeah. We have to take the vaccine. You just said, I still feel the needle mark. And on some level, or the needle, you feel the injection pain. I feel like a lot of that's psychological. I'm not trying to downplay your pain. I'm just saying.
No, it very well could be. Yeah. My decision to take it was kind of like, well, it's been, 4 or 5 months or something. And I know a lot of folks that have, taken both shots and they seem to be okay.
Yeah.
And just in the interest, too, of my own health, I have been extraordinarily cautious this past year.
Yeah.
Barely leaving the house, always masked up. And it's just kind of like more for my own mental relaxation to just have the vaccine just so that I know I don't have to worry so much about what could be a potentially fatal illness.
Well, yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Well, I will say the other aspect of my question was about your general sort of questioning of information and critical thinking, I suppose. I feel like that permeates this record in some cases. Am I overthinking this or do you feel like that's present?
I don't think you're overthinking it. I think it might be one of those things, again, like the comedic angle where it's just such a part of me that anything I do is going to have that angle to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's just the way you are. And that's just, this is a pretty pure expression of you then.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well,
I was kind of alluding to the theatricality and performative aspects of when you hear like this many layers of vocals, And you know, the instrumentation is what? Primarily you on acoustic guitar. There's drums and other instruments throughout, but is it primarily you on guitar and your voice?
Yeah, it's all the songs have me, except for one, have me playing guitar and singing. And then Ryan played drums on a handful of the songs. Mark, the engineer of the sessions, played bass. And then we brought in a horn section for three of the songs.
Yeah, like the song Right Through.
Yeah.
Quite different than, I don't know. There's a distinction between the, you basically have, they're not divided as such, I guess, but you have like this acoustic versus electric.
kind of
solo versus band dynamic, I guess it feels like, except your solo song still has like 15 versions of you on it,
right.
So it feels like everything feels like there's a gang of people, but it's really primarily you and your guitar, I guess.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah. And you know, I had wanted to have it all sound like of one piece, even though there was a lot of stylistic variety and variety in instrumentation.
Yeah,
like where, you know, you would know that it was one of my songs from this particular album.
Well, you've released a studio experiment, so to speak, at the right time, because there's not immediately a demand for you to take it on the road, but
right.
But I'm curious, like, this is a bit of an opening. You're opening yourself up here with this music, with this record. It begs the question, like, do you think there'll be more activity? Would you want to tour? Would you want to play live?
Yeah. And, you know, we're hoping to. So actually back in January of last year, we did a show of Ryan and I where he played drums and I had sang with no overdubs. He had done some backing vocals throughout it, and whistling too. There was he did a little bit of whistling, and we did that, and I thought it went really well. And so I think that the plan is to play some shows when we can, and if anything, maybe have another singer with me.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, back when I was in California, the shows that I was playing was just me singing along to pre-recorded music. So it would have all of the vocal overdubs with it. And I would be basically just, you know, I could have lip synced and it would have had the same effect.
I saw Cool Keith do a show like that.
Really?
Well,
where was that?
It was in Hamilton, Ontario. He had the album Sex Style playing and a DJ, I guess, scratching. But the album was just playing and he was rapping with his album on. And I know it's very common these days when you watch hip hop artists on Saturday Night Live or something. Eminem does it a lot. His backing track is just the album. It's just the song playing,
right.
And he happens to be there singing with you. So you are like the Cool Keith or Eminem of
Of whatever it is I do,
indie folk, country, whatever the music you make. Yeah. I feel like that you should put that. If it's not too late to add stickers to the front of the record.
It's funny you mentioned that. Do you know the Neil Hamburger prank phone calls album?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
So one of the original concepts for the sticker on the album was featuring Bette Midler as the ringmaster.
That makes sense. So so if you need to blurb your album, just use what I just said and add the sticker there. No,
the Cool Keith or Eminem.
Of modern music, I guess, is really the catch-all.
I mean,
so that's back in the day. That's what you would have to do. But your plan is to augment your vocal with potentially someone else,
right? If necessary, you know. I kind of feel like it's the songs are sturdy enough to withstand it, where it could just be me. And then if somebody liked what they heard and they purchased the album, they could be, you know, they could maybe appreciate the album version as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at some groups, too, like, you know, the Grateful Dead, their albums were quite different than their live shows.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm in the Bob Dylan camp where the album is just whatever happened in that time frame. And then the song can be anything it wants to be after that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like Bob?
I didn't want to.
Do you like Bob Dylan? I didn't mean to imply that.
No, I love Bob Dylan. Okay. And I know you do, too, from my... my fandom of Creative Control.
So I didn't know you liked the show that much, Ed. That's very nice of you.
I do. Yeah, I do quite a bit. And so, I should have said earlier, it's great to be talking with you and slightly surreal at the same time.
Well, no, I appreciate that. That's great. I had an inkling that that you appreciated the show, but I'm glad that you know it well enough to know that you took a stab in the dark that I might like Bob Dylan, and you were correct.
I was dead on point. And I love Berman too. So I feel like that's another artist that we have in common. And a huge fan of his for many, many years too. So
yeah, I'm as we're speaking, going through a bit of a thing with David's work, and my children are falling in love with it. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's fun. I've incorporated a couple of Silver Jew songs for the bedtime.
Which ones?
So primarily I take a guitar up there, and it was my daughter mostly. My son has sort of outgrown it, but he hears what we're doing. So yeah, I've been singing. My daughter will say, "I want squirrels." So I sing "Strange Victory, Strange Defeat," and she sings along.
Great.
And as she's fading, I sing "Random Rules."
Okay.
And I used to, they don't really remember this, when they were in their crib. It's a little inappropriate, but I thought also somehow appropriate. I would sing them, "How Can I Love You If You Won't Lie Down?"
Apropos.
It felt appropriate given that we were trying to put our kids to sleep. Yes. I don't think that's the original meaning of the song. But
right. You could maybe do "Fast Cars, Fine Snacks."
I would say the actual lyric, actually. And this is when they were babies. It was more therapeutic for me, frankly, to sing this song. Yeah, so those have all been in rotation. My son really likes Smith & Jones. He says that's his favorite song. So yeah, anyway, yeah, David's been on my mind. And so, I appreciate the gift he has given me. I hear from guests like you all the time. You know, I heard about your show because of David and David being on. And so it means a lot to hear that. So thank you.
Of course.
We're kind of subtextually alluding to Drag City Records, which was David's longtime label. You are not on Drag City per se, but you're on a new, is it some sort of affiliated label? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, it's an imprint. They make and distribute and promote the album, but it is on the Country Time imprint.
Country Time. Now, this sounds like a margarine or a lemonade something.
It's a little of both. It's, there's lemergerin.
Are you currently the sole artist on the roster?
Yeah, it's just me. Yeah, it's a great, everyone at Drag City is fantastic, and Country Time is equally great too. So
why did they, how significant are you that Drag City had to start a whole new label just for you, an imprint, if you will? Do you know what the rationale was? Like, why not just be on Drag City? Why do you have to be on Country Time? I'm just curious.
I think the reasoning was that if it was on an unheard of label, it would make the album seem even weirder.
Do you think I'll be frank with you. I was emailing with the publicist there, your friend and mine, Catherine at Drag City.
Yeah.
And we were just confirming all of this. And I wrote, and I did it deliberately, bluntly, and I meant for comic effect. I said about you, I said, "He seems weird. Is he weird?" And Catherine's like, "Ha ha ha, no, he's not weird at all. He's very nice." And I was like, yeah, I'm sure he's nice. I don't know. There's something about the record. It seems a bit weird. And that was where I was coming from. So you sort of self-identify as weird? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I feel like if I were, then I would not be weird. It's kind of like if you call yourself a hipster, you know, you can't be one.
Isn't Drag City, though, weird enough?
Right. Yeah.
Everyone is weird on Drag City, I feel like.
But, yeah.
But I've talked to so many people from there. Weirdos. The whole lot of them.
Well, I mean, I guess I wouldn't, you know, introduce myself as, "Hey, I'm Ed, I'm weird." good to meet you.
It's probably some weird business thing that I don't get. But I like that there's a new imprint, and I'm glad you're on it. Yeah. No, it's exciting.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's technically, it's Ryan's baby, so to speak. So my hope is that some of the folks that he's worked with and that he knows, like particularly Edith Frost, who is excellent, it would be cool if maybe I had some company on Country Time. But if it does turn out to just be me, hey, could do worse.
Now, I'm clear, this is great news. I'm happy for you. I'm happy for this auspicious occasion, your first full length album. The first release on a brand new label. It's great. It's exciting.
Totally.
So if people want to learn more about Country Time and your new record, I Stand Corrected, and you, would we send them to dragcity.com? Where do we send them?
Yeah, absolutely. So dragcity.com and their Instagram page have a bunch of stuff.
Okay. So we are still sending people to Drag City. Country yeah. Time will develop more of a web life of its own as it develops, we think.
Yeah, or not.
Or may not. Right, exactly. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, for now they can just go to the usual channels.
Is this some sort of weird tax loophole? Like, is this like having your accounts on the islands? Is that what they're doing? Like, I'm sorry, I don't mean to fix it on this. It just seems a little sus.
Well, you know, again, the goal was to make it seem like it popped out of nowhere. Okay. And so, yeah, you know, when you like pick up if you're shopping for used LPs and you see something that, you know, catches your eye and it's not on like RCA or something or, you know, anything that, you know, that's kind of the effect that we were going for.
Well, mission accomplished thus far. I am a seasoned label follower and I found this all not confusing. I get it. It happens. It's good. It's all good. Okay, so people can go to dragcity.com. And Ed, are you? Oh, sorry, Ed. Do we follow you on things? Are you on the things?
Yeah, I'm on some stuff. You know, I signed up for Instagram just for this, and it's E-R Jerken, and so E-R-J-U-R-K-E-N is where I am on Instagram, and yeah, you can see a lot of food related things that I post.
You like food, do you?
Yeah, if you like poorly constructed food photographs, like that's your spot. You want to photograph that.
I feel like that's why Instagram was invented initially. Just
more or less. Yeah, it was called La Margarinagram.
and they changed it, shortened it up.
Yeah, shortened it up. Yeah, once Facebook bought it.
So, yeah. All right. Well, I want to. I hope people follow you. I'll follow you on from my Instagram account at some point, and
I look forward to that.
It'll be great. Is there a song from I Stand Corrected that we can go out on? And if so, can you pick one and maybe tell us why you chose it?
I mean, do we have to do Let Go of the Coat, right? I mean, that's the one we've talked about the most. People are going to be curious. They're piqued.
I feel like that's the case. Is that okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good song. It's, you know, it's accessible.
Yeah, it is accessible and it's catchy. It gets in my head. It's infectious. For a song about medicine... Right. It's a little infectious. Let's go with that. Not going to top that. So we have to wrap this up. That was a closer. I think that was a closing statement. This is Let Go the Coat by E.R. Jerkin from the beautiful new album I Stand Corrected. Ed, this was a real pleasure. I hope you enjoyed yourself and I wish you the best luck in the future.
Yeah. Likewise, Vish. Thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure. Love.
What once was shore now grows, and his name is on the coat, a curtain once a pose. Oh, there's a little medication on the rise. Below.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, very special. Thanks. That was fun. Thank you, Ed Jerkin, for appearing on this, the 629th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, everything you would possibly need to know about me is on my website, vishkana.com. I mean in a professional context. There are things about me that aren't on the website. I'm trying to think of some of those fun facts. What are some fun facts about me that aren't on the website? I once stood in line at a Jumbo Video in Kitchener, Ontario in the rain with my father to meet Jake the Snake Roberts, the wrestler, when I was a kid. It was a long line, too. And apparently he had the snake with it. What was the name of the snake? Matilda? Damien? Damien, right? Anyway, I don't remember. But I was stood in line for a long time. That's a fun fact. That's not on the website. But there's other stuff you might want to know on my website, vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter at vishcreative, or follow me directly on Twitter or on Instagram at vishkana. Also visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast. $6 or more a month grants you access to exclusive content. And if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, just message me on Patreon and I will get you one while supplies last. I want to thank some people right now. You know who they are if you listen to the show all the time. I want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph. Fine retail establishments that I miss dearly. I also want to thank Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton for their in-kind support for this show. And, by the way, I want to thank Granddad's Donuts for setting aside a dozen donuts for my sister who was visiting Ontario and brought them to my parents. That was very kind of them. I also like that I assumed this would fall under the auspices of our sponsorship agreement, but they charged my sister. That's like my favorite part of that transaction. They actually forgot, and they're like, no, you got to pay for these donuts. And sorry, this is just mean, but I thought that was amusing to me. They're great. Granddad's Donuts are great, and you should go visit them. Also want to thank Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music of his on the show each week. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode, subscribing to the podcast, telling your friends about the show, maybe suggesting they listen to it. That all helps spread the word and keeps the show going, afloat, if you will. I will talk to you very, very soon. I hope you're having a nice time in your life and that we talk soon. Okay, bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.